weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home. Cambridge
105. The Gadget Guide.
And Robin Lawrence are here.
Good evening.
Hello, Julian.
Welcome along to the Gadget Guide. This week we're going to be talking all things drones. If you've seen those unmanned aerial platforms, I think they're now being called by some folks, flying around and wondering what all the fuss is about.
Starting Gadget Show 95 with drones.
Yep, all of that.
No, with tech news.
Oh, yes, exactly. Oh, all of that after the news. So first of all, Apple have been releasing some updates, haven't they? This is to fix a particularly specific threat. Normally they do sort of fairly regular security updates, but this one was after a particular case of someone from an activist from the United Arab Emirates very nearly falling prey to something that would have turned his phone into effectively a spy camera.
Yeah, so a couple of vulnerabilities, and these are what we call day zero attacks. So basically it's a vulnerability that's been discovered in the operating system that has not been seen by the company that creates operating system, Apple in this instance, and could have actually created havoc, like you said. So Apple are suggesting if you own an Apple phone or tablet, update as soon as possible. They've released updates for all of their current models.
And it's interesting because this, according to Sky News at least, one of the suspicions at the moment is that the people behind the spyware that was seen in this case may have been a company that effectively specialises in developing this sort of malware, this sort of spyware, particularly to sell to government organisations. Maybe in regimes that aren't necessarily as open as we enjoy in the UK.
Because, of course, there was that case in the States, wasn't there?
Yes.
Not that long ago.
Yeah, exactly that. So this is someone who, they've not confirmed that they've done it. There's no proof, but the indications are that it may have been developed by one of these companies that, you know, it's the nation state attackers. This isn't some script kiddie sitting in his parents' top bedroom. You know, just going after a cheap attack. This is targeted attacks at people by governments or other government-level organisations. So it's probably not one that everyone has to worry about going out and doing right this minute. But it's interesting that Apple have responded very, very quickly to this attack.
Yeah, and I think it's very responsible of them to say, yes, we've seen the issue, here's the fix, and please go and update your phone. So yes, if you've got an Apple phone or tablet, go and check for updates, plug it into iTunes or do your updates over there. Just make sure you've got enough space for them. And
I did both of mine this morning.
Fully charged and all of those things.
Phone and tablet, relatively painless, really. Yeah.
Okay, WhatsApp, you mentioned this just now in the news headlines, Julian. WhatsApp, and they are, of course, owned by Facebook. They got bought, was it
2014?
Was it that long ago? A couple of years ago. WhatsApp, the very, very popular messaging service, probably, I would say, skews to a slightly younger audience than Facebook's normal user base.
My mum uses it.
Does she?
Yeah.
Oh, mine doesn't.
Because
it's a Skype replacement sort of thing.
Text messaging,
now that they've gone totally free, because up until the beginning of this year, they were charging 60p a year for the service.
That was just irritating. I don't know what it would, other than the right to keep us on a mailing list somewhere. I couldn't quite work out what it did.
Yeah, so
not need adverts.
It's an SMS replacement, and of course, if you're doing international SMS, those are becoming more expensive. I just got notification from my network, the one that's just two letters and they're both the same, saying international SMSs are going up by 60%.
Wow.
Which is quite extreme. It's one of those things. And WhatsApp can save you money.
Yeah. I wonder if those sorts of things, and we've seen other increases in other areas of phone charging, there's sort of like a realignment, if you like, going on, in part because the European Union, which we're still a member of, tells the companies that they have to reduce the cost of calls.
Certain things.
So if you're maybe not calling somewhere in the European Union, well, maybe the charges will creep up there. And also that realignment, I think it was Vodafone who were sort of dropping the line rental charge on one of their packages.
Yes. And
emphasis on the sort of.
I would go along with your first theory of it's the same, I think to a degree, the same as rail fares. Yeah, you have some very tightly regulated sets of fares which increase or decrease as the regulation requires. And then you have the others that there's going to be a...
So the regulated fares, I guess, to use to continue the rail analogy.
Yes, exactly. And then you've got the unregulated ones, and that's things like foreign or overseas SMS messages, where actually the networks can do that. There is going to be a certain number of people who will pay that no matter what it costs.
Yeah.
Everyone else has gone already to WhatsApp, but the ones who are left on SMS are always going to use that.
Isn't a smartphone, which is still a thing. You know, people do still have non-smartphone mobile phones. Anyway, so back onto WhatsApp. Mm. So there's a couple of things you can do to stop sharing your number with Facebook before you accept the new terms and conditions. If you start using WhatsApp for the first time, you can scroll to the bottom of those terms and conditions that everyone just goes and accepts blindly, and right near the bottom is a checkbox for share my WhatsApp information with Facebook, and you can untick it.
So just to put this in context, this is if you're a WhatsApp user, your WhatsApp account is tied to your mobile phone number, isn't it? And this is a proposed change to automatically share that into Facebook.
Yes. The other option is if you've accepted the new terms, you've got 30 days to still opt out. So they are actually following even better than average UK contract law in giving you an opt-out clause. So you can go into the app, into the settings menu, find your account tab, go down to the checkbox that says share my account info and untick it.
Okay.
And you can do that for 30 days after accepting the new terms. So you can unsubscribe effectively from sharing with Facebook.
There you go.
What did Stuff magazine have to say, Jimmy?
Oh, yes. We've been talking about the charging or changing its privacy policy and part of a plan to create some targeted advertising as well as part of that. Sky have been speaking to Tom Wiggins. He's from Stuff magazine. You know it familiar, I'm sure, for his reviews of gadgets and technology. He generally thinks that we don't have to worry.
Recently, they made all their messages that you send are encrypted, so only you can see them, WhatsApp can't see them, Facebook can't see them. So clearly they have a dedication to privacy in that sense, and this, they've said, is so they can test out ways to improve the service by sharing these numbers.
Do you agree with that analysis?
Well, I was going to say, it's interesting they picked up on the end-to-end encrypted messages, because I'm wondering if they're effectively losing message content, because of course Gmail, Google with Gmail, originally pioneered will target your adverts based on the content of your emails. I wonder if WhatsApp, by introducing these end-to-end encrypted messages, they can't now target ads based on the messages. So maybe they need to open up another option, and they're doing it instead via phone number.
And of course, if they've linked it to your Facebook account, they then know that on Facebook you like kittens, so we'll actually send you kitten advertising.
Oh, that'll work for me.
Anyway, so moving on from WhatsApp.
Android.
I was going to say Olympics.
Go on, the Olympics
we've
quickly.
We've just finished the Olympics, so let's talk about 2020 Olympics already. So this is an interesting thing. We've all seen 4K TV, and we've possibly seen it in the high street shops that are selling ultra-high-def TVs, and maybe someone's actually bought one of these units. Sony and Panasonic are saying Olympics 2020, 8K. So this is...
So you just skip over 4K for the Olympics.
Double ultra-high def. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see.
See, we've missed out on this, but in some countries, I'm trying to remember, certainly it's the Nordic countries, and also in Italy, there was coverage of some of the key events in 4K on the local pay TV platforms, the Sky equivalents.
So, interestingly, some of the Rio stuff was shot in 8K by NHK, the Japanese broadcasting corporation, and it's because Japan is heavily behind 4K and 8K.
Oh, yes.
And they've been testing 8K broadcast transmissions, actually via digital TV. So they're heavily behind it. And, of course, where's 2020 Olympics?
It happens to be in Tokyo.
So, yes, of course they're going to try to get 8K sorted for that.
It does surprise me a little bit that we didn't see any 4K coverage here, because, of course, the BBC were pushing very early. I remember going back a few years, they were pushing the ultra high def standards.
I think it's just lack of broadcasters who can, or lack of set top boxes.
Well, I don't know, because arguably they could have done a deal with BT, because they've had an ultra high definition service and boxes. They haven't said numbers, which is often a clue, but they've had the service up and running for a year. Sky
Netflix
probably is a bit
also
late for them. Netflix is another. So the means are there. I wonder if this is almost a side effect of some of the financial constraints the BBC is finding itself under now.
Could it also be that need to do that partnership? The BBC themselves don't have the 4K distribution platform. They can't do it over...
Yeah, they have to do a deal. It certainly can't be done over terrestrial television. They have to do it with somebody else who's distributing their signal.
Okay, one last bit of news then before we hit the travel, and that is Android Nougat.
So this is version 7.
you can count the letters. always named after a dessert. Android Nougat, that got released last week. Depends what device you've got as to whether you're going to get it. If you've got one of the latest or later Nexus devices, these are the sort of...
Nexus 6.
Almost Google flavoured. They're made by other manufacturers, but almost Google flavoured devices. So Nexus 6, Nexus 9 tablet.
5.
And the 5X and the 6P. So basically, if you've got a Nexus device in the last 2 years, then you'll get it. If you've got a Nexus 5, like I have here, then you're not going to get it.
Now, all the other manufacturers are lining up and announcing their plans for it because they all tend to wait for Google to release the actual product. They've all had the code for a long while and they've all been working on developing their own flavours because Samsung do their TouchWiz thing, Sony do their Xperia Experience thing on their platform, and so on. LG do their own. So expect all of those manufacturers, especially if your phone is a year or probably 18 months old, should get Android 7 pretty soon when the manufacturers push it out. Samsung is saying that they will start pushing them out in the latter half of this year, so we're expecting possibly November timeframe. Interestingly, their latest Note 7 phablet, because it's an oversized phone, almost tablet, did not ship with Android Nougat. It was just badly timed for them to get it out on that, but they're saying it will be one of their first ones to update.
It is worth saying, even if you've got a device that's too old to get Nougat, Google will still continue providing security updates for 3 years at least after
on
the life
on the previous
of the device.
Version, yeah.
Yep. There we go. We'll be back in a few minutes and talking all things drones.
I'm nothing if not obvious.
It was how many tracks in the system have the word fly in them, Julian?
A lot. Plenty of them.
How many tracks will Julian play that have the word fly in them? Quite a lot shorter list.
Half a dozen, I would say.
OK, well, welcome back to the Gadget Guide, number 95, and we're talking drones now.
Well, we mentioned drones at various show points throughout the last couple of years. At things like CES, there's been drones shown and Gadget Show Live and so on, but lots of people still undecided about buying drones. You know, there's been lots of stuff in the press about drones causing problems and, you know, how legal a drone is and so on. So let's see if we can answer some of those questions.
Okay, so let's set the scene. And drones, they are basically unmanned aerial vehicles.
Now, we've had a drone on the show and we flew it in the studio, and that was a little toy drone.
Oh, I forgot about that.
About that one. I mean, it was the size of, you know, it would drop into the coffee cup on the desk here. But, you know, toy drones, yeah, they have a place. They're generally difficult to fly, and they start at about a tenner.
And I was just going to say that because when I was younger, not that I'm not young now, of course, when I was younger, you got radio-controlled aeroplanes, mm-hmm. and you could get radio-controlled helicopters.
And you spent thousands of pounds
on
them.
And they were always fairly expensive, and they were always a little bit rubbish.
And if you crashed it, it was like, that's £2,000 worth of model aircraft I've just turned into a kit form again.
It was, and it was, yeah, the sort of the barrier to entry was very, very high, both financially and in terms of flying skill,
yes.
Which was probably my problem. But in the last couple of years, that has all changed with these quadcopters, hasn't it?
Yes.
Rather than putting a single motor on the top or a single propeller and all these control surfaces, you just put four motors, four propellers, and spin the propellers, and it means there's far less complexity.
And, of course, all of the interesting tech that's been in our mobile devices, phones and tablets, with gyroscopes and accelerometers to work out where a device is and which way up it is, has made it easier for the electronics guys to build that into flying devices so that the device knows which way up I am, whether I'm going forwards or backwards, whether I'm descending, ascending, and suddenly you can automate a lot of the stuff that's the difficult part of flying.
And that's so true, because that means that it takes care of the sort of keeping it effectively, pointing the right way up, pointing the same way that you left it. And you just tell it where you want it to go. And that varies depending on which drone you have. So
moving on from toy drones, you've then got camera drones. And you know, that's the next obvious thing, is put a camera on the drone. And that then pushes your price up. I think the cheapest one I saw at the Gadget Show Live was about,
£33 on Amazon.
£33 on Amazon. but yes, certainly under £50 is going to get you effectively a camera drone.
Now, these aren't ever so wonderful, aren't they? They're, you know, it's entry level.
It's worse video than your phone is going to take.
It is, yes. It is. And also, that's the cheapest one, certainly these £33 ones, is you send it up, you fly it around, it records onto its own memory card. You fly it back, you get it off, and you put it on your laptop.
Yeah. Or you could strap a GoPro to it and then shoot 4K, because GoPros can do 4K, but you're still having to retrieve the card from your camera, as long as you make sure you get your camera or your drone back in one piece.
Yeah, that is true.
Now, and then, of course, the top-of-the-range stuff is the first-person point-of-view racing drones.
Yes. Now, I think my favourite out of all of these has to be, and there are loads around, but my favourite ones still have to be the DJI Phantom range.
They are sort of becoming the world leader in consumer drone manufacturers, because they have been very good at developing their product line. They're up to their fourth series in their Phantom 4, which is a very capable device. Even their Phantom 3 is still a very good good drone, but their Phantom 4 now has things like streaming the video from the camera that's on board back to your tablet computer that you're using to actually control the drone as well as fly it.
And it's worth saying that on the earlier Phantoms, it was sort of, you bought that and that was the drone, but then you had to add your own camera and you had to add your own video transmitter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could do all of that.
Yeah.
Now, you go and get a Phantom 4.
You buy a package.
And you connect to your iPad or Android tablet and it works. It's got the camera, it's got the video transmitter, it's got all the flight control system just built in. Well, price for those?
About £1,200.
£1,200. A little bit less if you go less on the camera.
We're still in the sort of market where radio-controlled aircraft were, but suddenly you've actually got something that it has a beginner mode, so it's easy to get started with the drone. When it's in beginner mode, it won't go further than 30 metres away from you, so you can't accidentally fly it too far away from yourself.
And it will, if you leave it somewhere, it'll stay there, won't it?
Yes.
Even if there's a bit of wind, because the very small drones, especially the sort of £10 ones, a gust of wind and they're off.
So the Phantom, when you start up in beginner mode, the first thing you've got to do is calibrate the compass and the GPS. Built-in GPS means that the drone knows where it is and it knows where it takes off from so that it can come back. What they've done in the software is smart things like when it knows its battery is getting to the halfway point, it knows that it needs to turn around and come back, and it will come back and land at your feet. Now, the Phantom 4 has got forward-facing obstacle detection as well.
Also, it'll walk around, it'll go around
trees and buildings and so on, and won't fly into things. You know, I'm going to do a straight line back to where I took off from. Oh, there's a tree in the way. That's going to be fun. So it's got that sort of technology built in. But so you calibrate the compass and the GPS. The drone then knows which way is up and which way it's going to go from you to come back. Then you put it on the ground and you take off, and you can say take off and hover, and it will take off to a couple of meters and sit in front of you
just ready for you to go.
So it's got an easy start mode so that you don't have to think about all the technical bits about, you know, accelerate up, lift, don't fly up too quickly, otherwise you're going to go sky high and disappear. And then the beginner mode, like I said, 30 metres away from you, and that's 30 metres up and all the way around. It just turns into a virtual cylinder around you so that you can see your drone. I mean, these things have got a 5-kilometre range.
But it's worth touching at this point on some of the rules.
Yes,
because
there's a whole lot of legal implications with flying an object.
If you are going to fly one of these things, you do need to be aware of some of the rules, and one of them is you must always be able to see it.
That's, yes.
You know, the thing will technically go 5 kilometres away, but if you are flying it, you must be able to see it.
I reckon if you've got it 1,000 metres, a kilometre away, you're not going to be able to see it.
Exactly. So
maybe at night you'd see its lights.
That's true.
But I reckon at 1,000 metres in bright sunlight, this little white speck in the sky is going to be gone. Anyway, if you're flying close to an airport, that's a restriction. Now, you might think
Most of Cambridge falls into that. You might think that
means I can't fly it anywhere in Cambridge. Now, what's interesting is if you're responsible and you phone up the tower at Cambridge Airport, air traffic control, and you say, I'd like to fly my drone at this location, this time, they will take your number down and let you know whether it's okay or not.
And assuming nothing's come in, they will generally give you permission.
Yes. So don't be afraid to ask for permission. A lot of places will give it. So, yeah, Interesting.
One other bit of the legal side of things that is mentioning, if you want to do this commercially, and that means if you're doing anything that you're getting paid for...
So if you shoot that video and you charge someone for that video, you are then doing it commercially.
And that means that you need to get a special license. It's, I think it's about a 2 or 3 day course.
Yep.
Not ever so expensive.
It's about the cost of a drone. It's about £1,000 for the course and the certification.
But you do need to do that. That gets you Civil Aviation Authority licensed, and that then lets you do commercial work.
You can also fly bigger drones in.
That's true.